Welcome to Sports Day Cowboys, a podcast all about the Dallas Cowboys, brought to you by the Dallas Morning News. I'm Calvin Watkins.
And I'm Michael Gelkin. We're two Cowboys beat writers having a weekly real talk conversation about the latest with the team, including interviews, analysis, and debate.
Thanks for being with us.
You know what, Michael? We have a lot to talk about this week with the Cowboys. QB1, Dak Prescott has a fractured right thumb. CeeDee Lamb was abysmal. Micah Parsons had two sacks. And oh yeah, the Cowboys are 0-1.
Yeah, we will hear from Cowboys owner Jerry Jones in terms of his initial reaction to that fracture. Also, is Cooper Rush ready for now his second NFL start?
And in our feature segment, Michael did a fantastic interview with the doctor. Dr. David Hay, an orthopedic surgeon who specializes in hand surgery.
That's all coming up, so stay with us.
Welcome back to the Sports Day Cowboys podcast. I'm Calvin Watkins with Michael Gelkin. Michael, the first time I covered a professional team was in 2006, and that was the Dallas Cowboys. You've covered three NFL teams. I can't ever remember a worse season opening game than what we saw Sunday night against Tampa Bay.
The worst that I've covered, too, and it's not just that Dak Prescott suffered this right thumb fracture that will knock him out for weeks to come, including this Sunday against the Bengals. But even before that injury, while the defense was impressive offensively, that was dismal. It was a dismal, dismal, disappointing showing. And even though we knew the offensive line question marks and we knew the questions at receiver, my expectation was for them to look better than they did.
Man, look, the first two plays of the game, I think they had a 7-yard pass to Dalton Schultz. Zeke gets a 7-yard run. I'm thinking, oh, things are looking good. And all of a sudden, a reverse, and it all goes downhill.
What did Jerry Jones think, Calvin?
Well, Jerry had a lot to say. Now, for people who don't know, maybe you do know, after almost every single game, Jerry Jones talks to the media. This is going back to when he first purchased the team. And there's about, I'd say, 20 reporters surrounding him right outside the locker room. And we're all asking him a bunch of questions about the game. So I was able to ask a couple of questions about this ball game, and Jerry purchased the team in 1989. And I asked him, is this the most disappointing Cowboys season opener he has ever seen? And this is what Jerry had to say about that.
No, the very first game, and we really had high hopes. We run if we won one game in 1989 and went down to New Orleans, and New Orleans really handed it to us. And I think the coach said it looked like a high school team out there.
One of the great things about Jerry is that you can ask him the same question five or six different ways, and you might get a different answer. You know, Michael, that's the beauty of Jerry. Now, one of the other things I asked him was about being disappointed about moving on without Dak. And Jerry had a pretty good answer.
Well, it's daunting. And I think that it just reminds me that this game, like life, is usually pretty daunting. The odds can be generally looked at as stacked against you. But I didn't expect to be standing here with you tonight with this report, I'll tell you that.
Nobody cares about your problems, and the Bengals are coming up in week two at AT&T Stadium, so there's no Dak Prescott. And we asked Jerry about the Bengals coming up and Joe Burrow. And if you forgot, the Bengals won the Super Bowl last year. Michael, I don't know if you forgot. But anyway, we asked Jerry about, is it going to be harder to beat the Bengals without Dak Prescott?
Well, everything about it. Of course, the disappointment for Dak is excruciating, and I'm not exaggerating. It's quite a disappointment. Our team is disappointed, not only for him, but for all of us. And we have to adjust, come in here and really, really be outstanding at figuring out ways to win ball games. And then you have to look to the fact that, no, he is not out for the year in any way. He'll be out several games, but not out for the year. And so we've got a lot of players that should and could be available for us as we go along. Let's just get in here and win some games and be there so that we can compete for that playoff when the time comes.
So, Calvin, that now leaves the Cowboys relying on Cooper Rush, someone that we saw last year make his first NFL start against the Vikings, an upset road win. Pretty impressive on Halloween night. Do you feel he will be ready now that teams know for certain he'll be the one who's starting on Sunday? And there's a lot more game film on Cooper Rush for this second NFL start than there was his first.
Well, if he doesn't feel like he's ready, he's going to be working at Starbucks by the end of the week. I mean, he's got no choice. I mean, he played against Minnesota. I didn't think they would have a chance to beat the Vikings last year when Dak was out with a calf injury. And Cooper Rush was fantastic. He won a game. Your boy CeeDee Lamb had over 100 yards receiving. He's going to be ready. Now, whether or not he wins that game, I don't know. What do you think about Cooper Rush's development over the last couple of years?
Well, I think he's come a long way. There's no doubt about it. The one thing that gave the Cowboys real encouragement based on what he showed against the Vikings was how he handled the highs and really the lows. Mm-hmm. If you remember, that game got off to a bit of a slow start for the Cowboys offense. And let's not make any mistake. Cooper Rush is not Dak Prescott. There will be some measure of a drop-off on Sunday in the weeks to come.
It's going to
be
a drop-off.
I do think so. Okay, it's one thing to be Cooper Rush and trust the talent around you, trust Amari Cooper for the game-winning touchdown, trust Cedric Wilson, trust all those weapons that the Cowboys had. Well, as you saw last week, this is not that offense that Rush had last year. And so I think it'll be more difficult for Cooper Rush to replicate the success he had last year, despite him having had that experience under his belt and some confidence that comes from that. I just think, just as the Cowboys, as we saw for 3+ quarters on Sunday, did not set up Dak to have a whole lot of success against the Buccaneers, I'm not sure how much success they've set up Cooper Rush to have now in these weeks to come.
Michael, that was bad. That was just a bad performance. And Cooper Rush is going to have the same type of personnel Dak Prescott had. Jalen Tolbert was a third-round pick, wasn't even active for that game. I mean, you've talked about why he wasn't active, because he can't play special teams. And Dennis Houston, undrafted kid, was active for that game because Dak Prescott trusts him. And Noah Brown seems as if he's been around 20 years. He's in that game, and he didn't do anything. And then CeeDee Lamb, who they think is going to be the number one guy, he just disappeared all night. So, you know, regardless of who's your quarterback, you know, this is what you're working with here. And on top of that, your boy Kellen Moore was terrible.
Well, I think of all those names that you mentioned, probably the one that is most disappointing is CeeDee Lamb. Mm-hmm. I think the Cowboys knew that Jalen Tolbert has a way to go in his development, special teams, but certainly offense as well. You know, Dennis Houston, you know, he made this team, is a heck of a story. Actually had the first reception of any Cowboys wide receiver. I don't know if anyone had that in their bingo cards back in April. But when you look at CeeDee Lamb, 11 targets, not all catchable, but nonetheless, 11 targets, team high, 2 catches, 29 yards, that's it for your number one wide receiver. I went back and looked at every single target that the Cowboys had for Lamb, and there was not a lot of separation. Yes, the Buccaneers were keyed on him, no doubt. Mm-hmm. Yes, they were being aggressive with their man pressed, sure. But if you're a number one wide receiver, the way that the Cowboys need CeeDee Lamb to be a number one wide receiver, he's got to get open better than that. He's got to be more dependable than thus far he has been. That is a problem. It would have been a problem with Dak Prescott under center, and it certainly is a problem now with Cooper Rush.
One of the things that I liked about that game, and there wasn't a lot much to like, was that Ezekiel Elliott ran pretty hard. Over 50 yards rushing. I think he averaged like 5 yards a carry. Mm-hmm. And they got away from him. And the fans want to get rid of Zeke Elliott. And I've been one of his biggest advocates. I think he's a client of mine, you know. But I will say he had a pretty solid game until they had to throw the ball. So I'm wondering, going forward against Cincinnati, what do you do with Zeke Elliott? And Tony Pollard was on the opposite end of that. He was just terrible.
Yeah, I thought it was really encouraging what the Cowboys got in the run game from Zeke Elliott. He had 10 carries for the game. 8 of those 10 carries totaled at least 5 yards.
It's pretty good.
Pretty impressive, pretty consistent. I think, A, that bodes well for the state of Ezekiel Elliott and this run game. But, B, that sort of production might become more difficult to find because a lot of teams in the weeks to come you would think are going to go single high safety, have another defensive back in the box and really make the Cowboys have to have Cooper Rush beat them with his arm. I think Cooper Rush is really going to have to show on Sunday, not just the Bengals, but every subsequent opponent while Prescott is recovering, that, hey, I can beat you with my arm. You can't just cheat and stack your defense against our run game. And if Rush can do that, I think this offense has a chance. If it doesn't, if he doesn't, then defense, that was really impressive on Sunday, Micah Parsons being part of that. Special teams, which I thought was a bit disappointing, kickoff return unit. I know they have seven rookies, but they got to do more to free up Kevontae Turpin than they did.
Nobody cares about your problems, bro.
Defense and special teams are going to have to lead the way, but the offense, if it can just do a bit with Cooper Rush to keep defenses honest against the run game, then I think the Cowboys have a chance to weather the storm.
It's got to be frustrating because, you know, Micah Parsons had two sacks in that game, and they were on third down, so obviously they missed one of the kicks. But you give up one touchdown to Tom Brady, you would think you'd win the ball game. You know what
I'm
saying?
You sure would think, Calvin. Yeah. You sure would think that, yeah.
You'd win the game. And all they had to do, and that's what's so disappointing about that game, was to score a touchdown. Guy scores one touchdown. Hey, man, you know, we're having a party. And instead, we're getting drunk. And we're sad. And the fan base is ready to get rid of Jerry. And that's the thing that trips me out. The fan base always wants to get rid of Jerry, knowing that this man will never give up the GM title. But that's another story for another day.
Yes. I don't know. Are you getting drunk? I wasn't getting drunk. You know who's not getting drunk? We have an independent doctor, someone who hasn't personally evaluated. He hasn't personally evaluated Dak Prescott, but he knows what this injury is. The timetable we will discuss coming up next. You're going to hear me speak to David Hay, orthopedic surgeon, specializes in hand surgery at Cedars-Sinai Curlin Job Institute in Los Angeles. As I said before, he has not personally evaluated Dak Prescott, but he's very, very familiar with the injury Dak has, an extra articular fracture of the right thumb. That's his throwing hand. On Tuesday, Jerry Jones appeared on 105.3 The Fan in Dallas and really put a lot of optimism onto this subject of Dak's return. We heard different timelines. Would it be 6 to 8 weeks that he'll miss? Well, it's sounding now like 4 to 6 because of the type of fracture that it is, extra articular fracture, we are told. I asked Dr. David Hay, is it realistic that, as Jerry Jones is saying, we could see Dak Prescott on a field within 4 games, Cowboys not placing Dak on injured reserve, and we could see him October 9th against the Rams. Is that possible?
Given that it's an extra articular fracture, then I think this is realistic. Maybe pushing it a bit, but I think it's definitely realistic.
Why so?
So he obviously has good bone. He's a healthy young man. And so the fracture that is outside the motion part of the joint and in the bone of the thumb, then with a clean fracture, as they've said, with good fixation lining this back up, after 3 or 4 weeks of healing, you're going to get enough healing there that the shared strength of the partially healed bone and the plate are going to be enough that everyone's going to feel comfortable taking a little bit of risk to return to play. Mm-hmm.
Is this something of a best case scenario when you're dealing with a thumb fracture for it to be, as you said, extra articular and to have a window of 4 to 6 week absence?
I would say so. This is probably the best case scenario for him. Things would have been much more complicated if he'd broken it into the joint or a more complex pattern of the fracture, which I think they're using this term clean to mean that it was a single fracture line with good opposable bone that they could get really good fixation with.
Is there a risk at all when we're talking about a player returning on the earlier side of a 4 to 6 week timetable? Because that fourth game, if he's able to return for that, it's October 9th there in Los Angeles against the Rams.
It's definitely a risk. Football is a contact sport. You got big guys moving at high speed into each other. And so he's definitely taking a risk, but you're balancing his ability to perform at a high level with an ever decreasing risk as each week goes by. You know, plate technology currently is really good. And in terms of our ability to put a small but very strong plate on the bone, hold the bone in such a way that as the bone starts to heal, a lot of research suggests that as the bone sort of becomes 50% healed, in addition to fixation, you're starting to get close to the strength of a quote unquote normal or uninjured bone. And so that's sort of the principle that we all work on. And, you know, it's really just a trade-off of as he heals, how is he feeling? How is he able to perform? Has the motion come back? Feels come back? And do we start to see enough healing on the x-ray that you feel like you've hit kind of that mostly healed, plates helping, and then you advance him.
Mm-hmm. How would you define the risk? So say he comes out there, you know, on the early side of that 4 to 6 week range, and on a play, on his follow through, his thumb slams against a helmet of a player, or as it did on Sunday night, it slams against the hand of a defender. What does it look like from there? What is that risk?
The biggest risk for him is re-injuring, refracturing the same spot, or breaking the thumb or injuring the thumb around the plate. So you can imagine a plate put on a wooden dowel. The plate's right where the plate is sitting is reinforced by the metal. So you could imagine some type of impact where you re-break the bone at its weak spot and break the plate, which would then require an additional surgery with a larger plate, trying to, you know, remove the plate. There's holes in the bones from those screws. Now you have to put a bigger, different plate to restabilize the bone. Or an injury where the plate supports the previously broken area of bone, but now the force is transmitted to the edges of the plates or the adjacent joint. And so now you injure either joint in front or back or the bones adjacent to it. And now you're having another surgery to fix those. So a refracture could potentially and likely be worse than the original one and would probably mean a timeline that's missing more games. But you know, certainly the medical staff and everyone's going to be thinking about that. And given how he progresses, they'll be taking that calculated risk. But that's the catastrophic risk.
I understand. Thank you. Can you explain the road from here for Dak Prescott? He underwent surgery on Monday. We're talking, you know, days later. What exactly is his situation in terms of rest, recovery, rehab, range of motion from Monday onward?
So in the shortest term, we're just trying to get the wound to heal. So I'm sure they'll be getting motion going in the thumb, watching the wound. And as the wound heals over the next 8 to 12 days, if they use sutures, this sort of thing, that will all come out. The wound will essentially be healed. He'll be ramping up all the conditioning, training, and everything, doing controlled motion with the thumb, avoiding any uncontrolled contact or impact of the thumb, and gradually increasing the fine motor skills stuff with the thumb. And as he feels better and better, gets stronger and stronger, you know, gets less and less symptomatic, and that bone heals, they're going to be ramping up the sports-specific stuff, throwing the ball, and when he feels ready and the bone shows enough healing, then they're going to be talking about taking the next step to play.
Mm-hmm. And enough healing, how do you monitor that in terms of the way that the bone is healing, and how do you make that distinction to the bone is healed enough for us to feel good about him returning to play?
Both the patient's symptoms and the x-rays, the bones of the hand heal quite quickly, and a non-displaced fracture in the hand that we'd initially treat in a cast and someone who wasn't going to have surgery, often within 4 weeks we're seeing some healing, and or it has become completely asymptomatic and the patient is moving with no pain. So the finger and thumb bones heal pretty quickly, and they've likely been able to get the bone back in perfect anatomic position. They've reduced that crack, you know, made the crack essentially disappear on the x-ray being held by the bone. And as they progress, you're going to see that crack disappear more and more on the x-ray, and they're going to start to give them some controlled loads and they'll know it's healing.
Anything else you want to add or emphasize that will help our listeners get a better understanding of this injury for a quarterback to his throwing hand?
Yeah, obviously, as the quarterback, you'd wish this happened to your non-throwing hand, but it sounds like, you know, we've had a best-case scenario here of a simple fracture, extra-articular to the thumb. They've had great fixation. He's obviously a tough, top-level athlete. He's going to move through this with all the resources to do the best he can. So you know, I think this is one where you certainly could wish that it was a different body part, but for what he's had here, it sounds like it's the best case scenario to give him the highest chance of getting back as quick as possible.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much, Doctor, for joining us. Really appreciate your time.
Of course.
I don't know about you, Calvin, but hearing the doctor talk there, and thanks again to Dr. David Hay for joining us.
He was great.
Hearing him talk about what that could look like if the Cowboys were to have Dak Prescott on the field with a bone not fully healed, he refractures it and he misses that much time. I mean, that is scary. And so if I was to guess, I would think we don't see him in that Rams game. Maybe we see him the week following, maybe against the Eagles. We'll see Dak, it sounds like, next month in October, but I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how much they're able to push this timeline, given that risk.
You know, it's interesting. When he breaks his thumb, you're thinking about who else has broken a thumb and played in a game. And Mike McCarthy mentioned Brett Favre in 99. So I text Brett Favre's agent, Buzz Cook. I say, hey, we want to talk to Brett Favre. And he says, well, I don't know, because, you know, Brett's got a little stuff going on. And well, Brett had sprained his thumb in 99 with the Packers, and then he broke the thumb in 2003, and he continued to play through it. Now, all thumb injuries are not created equal, but it is interesting that Favre played through this injury. I don't know. To me, I just think if Dak is going to come back, to me, realistically, October 16th at Philly seems to be what we're talking about, because that's really 4 weeks away. And then he's going to have a splint, because Favre played with a splint on his thumb. You know what I'm saying? So it's hard.
It's tough. And there's a balance there, Calvin, because you want to be able to, of course, when Dak gets back, if the bone isn't fully healed, to wear some sort of an apparatus that protects him from re-injury, that gives some form of security. But how effective is Dak going to be, one, with that on his finger, but two, will it affect him mentally? Is his follow-through, is he going to be thinking about that in the pocket when he's stepping up, when there's traffic all around him? And so I really think it's all going to be influenced by how well does Cooper Rush look in the few games that follow. Where are the Cowboys in the NFC East relative to the other three teams? As they stand today, they're 0-1. Everyone else is 1-0. They spotted the division a game, which isn't good. So that, I think, might influence what the Cowboys do, how soon it is that they do it. But it'll be interesting. Jerry Jones, never one not to be optimistic. We talked about that last week. He's always
one
a salesperson. He's selling it. He's selling it. And you know what? The roster speaks volumes, because he's not on injured reserve. So they're keeping that door open. But man, I think you heard the trepidation in his voice, and I've heard it from other people. If a re-injury happens, that's a nightmare scenario that the Cowboys – thus far, I feel like they've been able to avoid because of the positive news that has come since Sunday's injury.
Well, Jerry's been through this before with another guy, Tony Romo. Remember, he fractured his collarbone. Mm-hmm. Romo comes back, he gets hit, he fractures it again.
Exactly.
So this is not anything new. And you're right, it is scary. You know, it's your thumb. I can't imagine breaking my collarbone. I might be in a coma. Goodness gracious. But your thumb, you know, it's shotguns, it's the handoffs, it's all this kinds of stuff that's going to happen. You know, the follow through, you know, Ryan Leaf suffered a major thumb injury when he was in college on a follow through before the Rose Bowl playing for Washington State. He hits the helmet on the throw and he had the x-rays and all that. And his thumb just swelled up so bad. So between that last game and the Rose Bowl, he was getting constant treatment. So it'd be interesting to see once Dak gets that cast removed from the thumb, how much treatment he's going to be undergoing. When will he be able to throw a football? How effective it will be? Because, you know, in training camp, they were talking about Dak's velocity is at highest point. Well, will he still have that velocity going into the Eagles game, you know?
All valid questions. Calvin, I love you to pieces. You're a
you
good
do?
Friend as well as a coworker. But we often disagree.
We do.
Let's get going on that. Our next segment, Lyle Collins coming to town. Should he still be a Dallas Cowboy?
What?
We will disagree.
Hey, listeners. This is Damon Marks. I'm the Cowboys editor for the Dallas Morning News. That includes the Sports Day Cowboys podcast that you're listening to right now. What I love about this beat is the nonstop news cycle that is the Dallas Cowboys. But beyond that daily adrenaline rush, being able to reveal the human side of the players you watch on TV is a privilege. Calvin and Michael talk to these players each week to bring you the behind-the-scenes stories that you can't get anywhere else. If you want to support this good work, it's easy. Just subscribe to the Dallas Morning News and become a member. You'll find a special offer just for listeners at dallasnews.com/listen.
And now it's time for one of the favorite segments of our two-week-old podcast, I Disagree segment. The Cowboys made a mistake, Michael, in cutting right tackle Lyle Collins.
I disagree. Mm. There were a lot of factors that contributed to the Cowboys' decision to move on from Lyle. And honestly, I think we can both acknowledge that we don't have them all in terms of the every step that went into the decision to move on from an offensive tackle. But there, from summaries that I've gotten from people inside the building, was a lack of trust in Lyle Collins. Can he stay healthy physically? A big part of that. He had the hip surgery in 2020. He missed all of that season. Last year, in terms of he dealt with some physical stuff, but I think the fact that he missed several drug tests in 2020, was accused and ultimately found by an arbitrator to have bribed the specimen collector in order to not have to take these tests anymore. Maybe it was a joke, as Lyle Collins said it was, but either way, that was the determination. And then you have a 2-game suspension that the NFL initially levied. He goes ahead and appeals it, has to miss 5 games over that. And then some other aspects of just, again, we don't have every last detail, but the tone that you got really from the Cowboys is they can't trust him. They can't trust him to stay healthy. They can't trust him to be dependable. And that is a problem. Terrence Steele, a third-year offensive tackle for the Cowboys, has done his job from the jump. Someone who came in as an undrafted rookie and earned playing time, got thrown into the fire, really, because of Lyle Collins' lack of availability. But ever since then, has done nothing but improve in his development. Had a rough game on Sunday, no doubt.
Had a rough game.
In certain pockets, but let me say that.
Certain pockets?
I'll rephrase. He overall had a strong game on Sunday, but the penalties, yes, were a problem, and I'm not worried about them.
Okay, check this out. The man had before we go to Terrence Steele, let me just talk about Lyle Collins. In 2019, this man signed a 5-year deal with $50 million. Okay, it was a contract extension. Ever since then, his health has been a problem. Yes, the drug testing, that was, look, you got to get your test, bro. If you don't want to get your test, it's a failure. We all understand that. Lyle Collins did not do the proper things when it came to the drug testing program. But the guy played through health issues in the last 3 or 4 years, and he had to get the surgery. Tyron Smith, who's probably going to the Hall of Fame, their starting left tackle, he had similar health issues, and he ended up getting a surgery and missing a good portion of a season. To me, when you see what Terrence Steele did in that first game against Tampa Bay, where the man committed 4 penalties, let me tell you something. The offensive coordinator, Kellen Moore, very rarely criticizes people. And so we're talking to him about the mistakes the Cowboys made. He says, on the record, at a press conference at the Star, the day after the game, we got to get guys to stop committing pre-snap penalties, or we got to find somebody else in there. Well, who is he talking about? Terrence Steele. He's not talking about Dak Prescott. He's not talking about Zeke Elliott. He's talking about the starting right tackle, Terrence Steele. Look, they made a mistake in cutting Lyle Collins. Yes, the money was interesting. They saved $10 million. That comes off the books. He's going to count $8.7 million on the cap this year. We all understand that. But but if you're trying to win a championship, which the Cowboys claim they're trying to do, you keep quality players. Getting rid of Lyle Collins was a mistake, in my opinion. And we'll find out just how Terrence Steele will play on Sunday against the Bengals, because the Bengals are going to tear his behind up.
I'm looking forward to seeing DeMarcus Lawrence versus Lyle Collins. I think that's going to be one of the most fun matchups that the Cowboys are going to have all season. But I think when we're talking about the penalties on Sunday, mm-hmm. We need to contextualize the penalties on Sunday.
How can you contextualize 4 penalties?
Let's do it. He had 4 penalties. He had eight all of last season. Terrence Steele did.
He's halfway home. He's halfway home after one game.
He had three false starts. This is not a player who has been a pre-snap penalty problem. He had three false starts the entirety of last season.
It's four penalties in one game.
And three of them were on one drive.
I forgot about that. Oh, my. I'm leaving.
I'm not saying that Terrence Steele made – it was not a big deal that Terrence Steele had those penalties. That was relevant and it mattered. But if we're talking about player evaluation, something Kellen Moore also said – I believe it was him. Maybe it was Mike McCarthy, the head coach. Said on Monday, they're not worried about Terrence Steele because of the player that he is. And by the way, I know you can kind of poke holes at Pro Football Focus grades. That is easy to do, and we can certain times when it comes to how they perceive Trayvon Diggs and all that, I'd be there to join you. But it is worth noting that the highest rated run blocker on the Cowboys, Terrence Steele, just ahead of Tyler Smith.
Jerry Jones was on the radio earlier this week, and they asked him about the offensive line, and he mentioned your boy, Tyler Smith, who played left tackle, and he mentioned Tyler Biadasz. I wonder why he never mentioned Terrence Steele. But
he was focusing about the left side. He was also talking about Matt Farniak. He was, you know, with Connor McGovern's high ankle sprain, we won't see him on Sunday. I think he was just giving some love to the young players. But on the other side, the right side, Terrence Steele, highest rated run blocker for the Cowboys, according to Pro Football Focus in week one, second highest pass blocker, behind only Zach Martin. So I would say that, yes, the penalties were a problem, but that problem is not reflective overall of the player that Terrence Steele has been over the course of his Dallas Cowboys NFL career. Likewise, the play that he did on his other snaps deserved more attention, and that was very impressive from him. And by the way, he's a whole lot cheaper than Lyle Collins. Now, did the Cowboys, you look at their offensive line, sure. Give them all the quality offensive tackles they can have. But this is a salary cap era. And if you have a guy who costs as much as Lyle Collins does, which is what he did before he was released in March, and you can't trust him to stay healthy or otherwise, and you have a guy like Terrence Steele, go ahead and make the move. If you feel that strongly about Lyle Collins, which the Cowboys have all the information in the world, more information than you and I, that is how they felt, and that is what they did. And we have a 40-year-old Jason Peters who's in his ramp-up program as we speak on the practice squad. He could be ready. I don't know about this week. We'll wait and see on there. But certainly next week, I think that would be a fair expectation. He's waiting in the wings as well. And so I think the Cowboys are okay overall without Lyle Collins.
I need a 20-second timeout here. You just mentioned Jason Peters is waiting in the wings. For who? Which position? That's what I'm asking. Which position?
Well, I think that's one of the most intriguing I'm glad you asked. I think that's one of the more intriguing questions with the Cowboys is that he can play left tackle. He can play right tackle. I don't think we'll see him at guard, although he has some experience there. But, yeah, his versatility, it's relevant. And I think the Cowboys won't hesitate to put that to use if they feel inclined based on certain situations that may arise. Hey, Terrence Steele's got to get better at the penalties. And if he doesn't get better and he's doing three – false starts and a hole in the game, shoot, you can go ahead and put Jason Peters as your starting right tackle. That's fine by me, Calvin, but I don't expect
– I think I won this thing.
I don't think you did. I'm being a gentleman, here's the point is that Terrence Steele is not going to have four penalties a game. He might not have three false starts the rest of the season combined.
Maybe not. But we live in the now world. I can't live in the future. I'm living right now, today. And this man leads – the National Football League that's run by Roger Goodell in penalties with four. That's a fact. That's not Pro Football Focus judging it. That's not me judging it. That's not you judging it. That's a fact. That's on paper. He leads the National Football League in four penalties, and here comes Lyle Collins, a man who they cut so they can put Terrence Steele as a starting right tackle in the National Football League. He's going to come in here, and he's going to handle his business. Will he handle DeMarcus Lawrence? I don't know. But I'm more confident with Lyle Collins as my starting right tackle than I am Terrence Steele. Because, look, let me tell you something. Terrence Steele leads the National Football League in four penalties. And there's nothing you could say other than that. You know why he had a high rank rating? Because they ran to his side. Because you know why? They got a Hall of Fame right guard over there in Zach Martin. So, yeah, we're going to run towards the Hall of Fame guard. Why wouldn't they?
Hey, Calvin, You're right, Michael. Terrence Steele does lead the NFL in penalties with four, and nobody else has more than two. And here's a fun stat for you.
Give me a fun stat.
Over the past two seasons, so last year and one game into this season,
here we go.
There are three players across the entire NFL, offense, defense, and special teams.
Just three?
Who have committed four penalties in a single game. Terrence Steele and cornerback Anthony Brown for the Cowboys are two of them. The other is an offensive lineman for the Bills, Spencer Brown. He had four penalties in a Week 15 game against the Panthers. But Cowboys have two of the three. They're two and three of the podium. They made it.
It's a hell of a team we covered, boy.
Almost a clean sweep. Fun times for the Cowboys. Maybe next week will be better. Maybe we're going to talk a little something more positive. But with the Bengals coming to town, defending AFC champions, we'll see about that, Calvin.
And that's all the time we've got for Sports Day Cowboys. Thanks so much for listening.
Sports Day Cowboys is produced by Damon Marks. You can stay up to date on every episode by following Sports Day Cowboys wherever you get your audio, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can also find the show and more audio from our newsroom by following the Dallas Morning News and those same players.
You can find links to everything we do at dallasnews.com/listen. You'll also find a special membership offer there just for listeners. We also want to hear more from you, so email us your questions, comments, and voice memos at dmncowboys@dallasnews.com. You can also ping us directly on Twitter @dmn_cowboys and on Facebook @CowboysFansCentral. For the Dallas Morning News, I'm Calvin Watkins.
And I'm Michael Gelkin. We'll see you again next week.